T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
On the first half of the show, we had a conversation with Brian Geltzeiler, talked a lot about the Cubs, about the weather, about what's going on, about the game time decision tonight. There was a late ad as a national game, and that apparently we could believe might be affecting some of the decision making because of their choice to do that, and also looking for some alternatives. But it is going to be, in my opinion, unplayably cold. So we're going to see how they handle it.
I think in many people's opinion, it will be unplayably cold. Unfortunately, those opinions who matter want baseball games played. All right, first one off the books here. Let's stick with baseball. Major League Baseball's swing and miss percentages continue to ratchet up to a point that's really, really something. I was looking through, and a couple of different places had this, and a couple of beat writers are tweeting it out. In 2005, any guess? It probably doesn't make sense to make you guess 13 years ago what the MLB swing and miss rate was, but it was 19.4%. It's not pure strikeout rate. This is swing and miss percentage. From 2005, it has gone up each and every season,
okay,
slowly but surely, except for 18 this year from 17. In 2017, it's 24.5%. In 2018, it is 25.4%, an increase of nearly a percentage point. That's league-wide.
God.
That's every swing. That's all over baseball. We'll talk with Jeff Sullivan later in the week. I don't know if that necessarily qualifies as an alarm, but if it's not, the klaxons are warming up. I mean, that is a whole percentage point. That's incredible.
This, according to awful announcing, golf is an outdoor game, which means it's sometimes at the mercy of the elements more accurately. It always is, but sometimes it's a bigger deal than other times. Severe storms were predicted yesterday across the Southeast, including the venue for the PGA Tour event, the RBC Heritage at Harbortown on Hilton Head. The threat of that weather prompted the event to move up tee times.
Interesting.
In an effort to finish ahead of the severe weather. Len Casper talked about this.
Right.
Regarding baseball, saying, hey, we're given ample warning. We know what our window is. We know when the rain is coming. So let's get this party started a little earlier. So they describe it as an admirably flexible move. Nobody wants to stay until Monday. If you've ever been at a golf course for a massive storm, you know there's no place for people to take shelter. Mm-hmm. So the earlier adjustment made sense, unless you're CBS, which decided to stick with their original coverage window and air the event delayed. It also makes some sense. What doesn't make sense was making the live broadcast unavailable as it was happening, and they didn't even stream it, and it was exciting, and it went to a playoff, and there was a collapse at the end that led to a playoff between a couple players you've never really heard much about in Satoshi Kodaira and Siwoo Kim, with Kim really struggling down the stretch. He ended up losing on the third playoff hole, but this shows you both the flexibility and the complication involved in moving up a sporting event.
Is it easier to do that because it's golf and you're out there for 4 days anyway? Because of it's essentially a week-long event. Everyone's there. If you've got tickets for Friday, you've probably got tickets for Sunday, right? Or if at the very least you have tickets for more than one day, especially in an event like that. You know, if you're going to a major, you probably just have your Friday tickets. You don't have Friday,
sure,
Saturday, and Sunday.
I just found it interesting that here is a sport doing exactly what Lenny was asking baseball to try to do more of to gain that flexibility. But it shows you that there are always going to be complications that you don't foresee.
So I'm reading through a recap a little bit of the Sixers game, right? And they're talking about it's on The Athletic, and the guy who writes it is Rich. I wrote it down. Rich Hoffman. And it starts out talking about the adjustments that were made in this game, right? The fact that Brett Brown took Amir Johnson out and put in Ersan Ilyasova in the second half and wanted to space the floor more for Ben Simmons. They did that. They struggled early. They get themselves a 30-point win. They space the floor. Everything's great. The paragraph, the second-to-last graph in here, got me down a YouTube trail that I thought you might find interesting. Here's the graph. As it turned out, this game one didn't resemble the war. as neither team came out of the gate throwing wild haymakers. But to steal a boxing analogy in the name of Harold Letterman, that third quarter flurry ensured that Brown and his staff took a round one against a more experienced and highly regarded coach.
I'm here for Harold Letterman. I had a 10-9, and I didn't think it was a slip. It was a knockdown, so I scored, 10-9.
So the cool part,
okay, right?
That's really good. The cool part about reading the piece online is that it comes with the hyperlink, right?
Okay.
Like the war, I have no idea what the hell that is. I've never heard of it. I don't know what it is. Do you know the fight?
Wins above replacement?
It's a boxing match. It was termed the war. It's Marvelous Marvin Hagler versus
Hearns.
Thomas Hearns.
Oh, come on.
April 15th, 1985.
Unbelievable. Hagler gets cut right above his nose.
Yes.
And it's when the wobble of Hearns' legs.
He's so skinny anyway in his legs.
And he throws from such a base that when you saw his legs go. And then it was how many rounds was it?
Three.
It was only three rounds.
Three rounds. He's knocked out in the third round.
It's a lifetime of a boxing match.
It is
a lifetime.
I watched Joe and I
You've
did a thing in
HBO. You've never seen Hagler Hearns? I didn't know
three
it was called
months,
the war.
It was apparently
just,
it was called the war.
I just know it as Hagler Hearns.
I had never. It's 3 months before I was born.
Oh, come on.
I was never brought up as like a boxing guy, and I went back and I did. We watched the we went down for Pacquiao Rios
young
to Vegas.
Man, do I have YouTubes for you? Seen Foreman Lyle?
Yes. I went deep. Damn. I watched a lot.
Okay.
And because I wanted to figure out what the hell we were talking about because I never, but this one had escaped me and I feel like crap because of it. I'm watching this thing on YouTube last night as somebody's getting blown out. I forget what basketball game I was watching at the time, but I have never seen anything like that. I know it's 32 years ago, but I've never seen anything like this.
It's great.
The bell rings and I'm going, okay, here's a dance recital for 2 minutes. We'll see what happens. Everything's going to be fine. And there's probably a haymaker in the third, something like that.
Mm-mm.
It was unbelievable.
It's like a Rocky movie in that everything lands.
Right. Where you watch you watch this fake boxing match.
Yep.
You go, yeah, that's great. It would never happen. They would die. They would absolutely die three rounds in. And he did.
And when we interviewed Thomas Hearns at the Super Bowl in Detroit, and he was hanging around, and we talked to him about that. Nice guy who's struggling a little bit.
Was he?
Yeah. I think he forgot he was on with us, and we're kind of still over there waiting to go on with us. But it was really that fight. And because you have to remember that after the era of the heavyweights, after the time of Ali, when you were already starting to get into the Larry Holmes, and it was even past that. That's when that weight class took over.
Yeah,
that's when it's Sugar Ray and Duran and Wilfredo Benitez, and that was it. That's when all of the boxing's attention, for those of us who are big time mainstream boxing fans, that's when it moved to that particular weight class.
I was beyond thrilled by this whole thing. I actually have it saved because apparently Sugar Ray then later fought Hagler
and members
or maybe
of Sugar Ray.
That's the fight I'm going to watch this afternoon when I get done and spend a little time. I think I'm going to spend the week, just in parts, in like a mid-1980s boxing YouTube spiral. I'm looking forward to it.
There's a lot to chew on with this particular story and this particular analysis of the story, but I was just mesmerized by this piece at Vox.com by Joanna Grossman talking about how complicated this New Orleans Saints cheerleaders lawsuit is. And we've heard some of the headlines and we've seen some of the stuff, but just so you know what we're dealing with here, Joanna Grossman, who wrote this, is an endowed chair in Women and the Law at SMU's law school. She has written books all about gender and sex in the workplace and what is at stake here. And it's incredible about how counterintuitive this actual lawsuit is, because it's ridiculous on its face.
You say the things out loud and it's like, well, okay. Done deal.
Right. They're having to protect
this is stupid.
The cheerleaders from the rapacious players because it's on the cheerleaders. They have to leave a party if a player shows up.
Or a restaurant.
Can't control themselves.
Public spaces.
However, the actual letter of the law in this case about what has to be proven on the grounds that she's arguing about gender inequality, the point being the jobs are not equal as far as gender. There are no women players.
Mm-hmm.
There are no men cheerleading. So that's where the complication comes in. There's also the complete difference in the importance of what they are asked to do. It is not necessarily wrong for a less important, lower-level employee to bear the burden when it comes to the relationship rules with other employees.
Yeah.
And it's incredible how upfront and how clear she is in saying, speaking to what the role of the NFL cheerleader is, and that is to titillate heterosexual men and to be hot for a living. And whether or not that's legal to have to be hot, that's a completely different case and not to be
right.
tested here. But it's just amazing how starkly and how plainly she says what the job is, and it's very, very difficult to say that I'm being discriminated against when your job is to titillate heterosexual men who might be watching or attending, and then away from the field, you have to do everything but that. And I was astonished to hear this from a law professor saying what could be at stake in trying to challenge some things that are very difficult to challenge because you've accepted a job to do just that.
Yeah, to me, this is going to come down to the fact that she signed up for this. And it sucks.
And it might be awful.
And it sucks.
Yeah, the idea of the whole idea of professional sports cheerleaders is antiquated, vestigial,
dumb.
And dumb,
pointless. It doesn't add anything for you. I need a ruling, and I'm hoping I can use all of us to get this ruling here, fellas. Patrick Reed. I don't know, everybody see Patrick Reed at the Rockets game last night. He's a big Rockets guy. He's a fan. Patrick Reed, Masters champion, of course. Patrick Reed, well, that's the other thing. Yeah. Patrick Reed has been seen at Chick-fil-A wearing his green jacket.
Mm-hmm.
This was the day after he won the Masters, which, to me, fine. He's seen at a Knicks game wearing the green jacket, an Astros game wearing the green jacket, and
to take it off premises.
Well, and he's not wearing a collar underneath the jacket at the Rockets game last night, which I thought you had to do. So,
also sweating profusely.
My question is
Ted
twofold.
All of a sudden.
Rules of green jacket wearing aside, where does this rank on the baggery level? And does Patrick Reed need to be called out for his wearing a trophy in and around everywhere he can find?
It's just the latest in the Patrick Reed I'm a bag chronicles.
It's too much, right?
I thought you weren't allowed to. Maybe it's just a different green jacket.
It's just a green sport coat. He got a JCPenney on the way.
That's what I mean. It might be. It seriously might be. Because
you're saying he's wearing a replacement green jacket.
Possibly, because I thought you could only wear the green jacket when at Augusta.
I did not. Okay, well now this is...
It's not like the Stanley Cup, where they have like keepers and they bring it around.
No, but there are the same stains on both.
Patrick Kane's texting, bring me my cup, bitch. Yeah.
I didn't know that we could have... I didn't think of the replacement green jacket.
That's what I thought. I
never brought that into the equation.
Wearing a version of it, say, look at me. By the way, if this green jacket should remind you of anything, there's a real one of these with my name on it.
Still, even if he's wearing the replacement green jacket,
that's
baggery.
Almost worse.
Yeah,
right?
Isn't it?
Because I'm looking here. The green jacket has a Masters patch on it. And I'm not seeing that on the one he's wearing at the game. So this may just be a green sport coat.
That's like carrying your Academy Award around with you or something, right?
This from the 708. Sergio wore his to Wimbledon and his wedding. But now I need to know if everybody gets... Maybe that's more convention than I thought. Wearing like the backup green jacket for like photo ops and whatnot.
I'm okay with it because if there's going to be the photo ops, it helps cover the fat. And I'm always thinking about fat logistics.
If you get the chance, I just put this in the Twitter timeline here. There is a video from the Washington Capitals playoff game, and it is a play. What's his name? Connolly?
Adam Connolly. I looked it up and then I forgot it.
Yeah, I didn't know who
Jay,
he was.
Jay, any help? We're in 10 for the Washington Capitals. Connolly.
Connolly, 10 Capitals.
Nice
so
guy.
As they're warming up for the game, Connolly sees three adorable little kids in Capitals sweaters right on the glass, banging on the glass.
Brett Connolly.
Brett Connolly?
He's Canadian.
So Brett Connolly, and right in between, I think probably her two brothers, her two older brothers, is this little blonde-haired girl. And Connolly goes over and he points at the girl and he takes a puck and he flips it up over the glass to, I think, the dad.
Yeah.
And the camera's got all of this. It's a minute-long video. And the dad hands it to one of the boys. So there's a whole other thing that you know is going to happen here once this gets around.
Obviously.
Right? So, and the girl is sad. So Connolly sees what happens. And he comes back with another puck. And he bangs on the glass again. And he flips it up over the glass. And the dad catches it and hands the puck to her other brother.
Yikes.
And Connolly's like, no, it's for her. And he's making a point of like, no. So he gets a third puck. And flips that over the glass. And finally, the third puck gets to his intended recipient. And the little girl goes crazy because she's so happy. And now, as you would expect, the dad is facing the wrath of Twitter. As why would the dad assume that it's for the boys instead of for the girls? Why would he make that assumption and do it twice to give it to his two sons where the player was actually trying to give it to the little girl?
Yeah, and that's the part that's you watch this video and Brett Connolly's not banging on the glass. You know, like he's pointing to the little girl
right.
To let everybody know that this puck is for her. She's as goosed about this whole thing as anybody.
And with my hockey experience yesterday, as our team was absolutely destroyed by a team that had four girls on it, including the none of these arguments. Don't start with me right now about the arguments about why they would assume that the boys would care more about the puck. All I know is that there were a bunch of girls yesterday that cared a whole lot more about winning a hockey game than our weak ass goaltender did.
Oh God!
Oh, he was just
Well, make sure you get it out there. I'm sure he'll appreciate everyone knowing.
I said it the first thing I said. You know, he's old enough now that I said it after the game, like. What the hell are you doing out there? And I mentioned
Dan turns into hockey dad.
Well, no, because look, he didn't. It's spring hockey. Who cares? But I said something to one of the parents. I said, look, I apologize. I will not be doing tequila shots with my kid before games anymore. I said because that really just I love some El Nacimiento tequila.
There's just something nice.
Yes, I love the añejo, but I said I'm not going to let him do six tequila shots before a game if it's going to look like that. Because that's just I literally said, what the hell are you doing? I don't know. I was bad. I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah. That is your midway. We do it every day at 11 here on the Bernstein and McKnight show. There are a couple of Dan, you mentioned before the show you want to talk a little bit about Shohei Ohtani and the run he's had. Apparently we found a little audio that you wanted to have from Jake Arrieta about the issue.
I think we've run this before, but as we now know, if you haven't heard this, Jake Arrieta talked specifically right before the draft about Shohei Ohtani and about what he apparently, guys like that. And I posed the question to him, I believe, can somebody be a hitter and a pitcher full time in MLB? And the answer right now is obviously yes.
Yep. Seems fine.
But
someone can.
And maybe you remember what he said because it was top of mind then, and now we're seeing what's actually happening as someone's trying to do it.
I have supplemental Ohtani fun for us as we approach it too. So we'll do that when we get back. He's Bernstein, I'm McKnight. You've got 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Yeah, we need to ask him about his Phillies teammates now, because that was John Jay he described, as we asked who looked best walking around the clubhouse in their underpants, and he said John Jay
was underwear model.
Solid with his nice setup.
We're not looking for Fabio here.
This segment brought to you by Dell. Small businesses get tailored tech solutions when they partner with Dell, plus free shipping and a price match guarantee on everything, including laptops with Intel Core processors. Call 877 by Dell. A lot of people were wrong about Shohei Ohtani. I am one of those people that was wrong about him because I made the silly mistake of thinking that spring training performance actually mattered. And so far, so good for the rookie Japanese import, who probably really shouldn't be considered a rookie. But before he was drafted,
I'm giving him rookie status.
Before he was drafted, we asked Jake Arrieta on these airwaves what he thought about the idea, the possibility that somebody could be both position player and pitcher at the major league level. Could we have a two-way player, somebody who could actually function not just as a carnival sideshow, but somebody who really could be an everyday level hitter who could also be in any game a high leverage reliever, say? Is that possible, or is it just asking too much of what one human being can be good at?
It's not possible. I would love it to be possible. I really would. You know, I've seen some amazing two-way players in college. I played against probably one of the best college two-way players ever in Joe Savory, who went to Rice. And he just, once you climb the ranks, you get into the minor leagues, and you see just how difficult it is, and how many games you play, how often you're on the road, how much you travel, and trying to carry the workload of a position player and a pitcher, and whether that's a starting pitcher or a reliever. I mean, you're asking so much of your body. A young guy who's 20, 22 might be able to do it briefly, but I don't think there's any way that somebody's able to sustain that over the course of a career. I think eventually guys are just going to have to choose, you know, which one they're best at, what they're most comfortable with, and honestly, the organization wants from them. So while I would love to say it is possible, I just really don't think it is.
All right, so the Japanese Babe Ruth, Shohei Ohtani? Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah.
He's off the list then for the Texas Rangers, huh?
Well, I mean, if he can show the Major League Baseball that he's capable of doing something like that in that capacity in this league, then we'll see. I mean, I could be proven wrong, but I think most people agree with me that it just requires just too much of your body on a daily basis. And it would really limit the recovery time of that player. And with that, all the variables incorporated in the season, I just think it's not doable.
Jake Arrieta.
I've got some thoughts for you on that and some Shohei Ohtani supplemental fun, too.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Before you get to your Shohei Ohtani stuff, a little bit of news here. The makeup dates have been set for the White Sox-Twins games that were postponed, including, as you mentioned, a pair of doubleheaders.
Let me get out the White Sox schedule here so I can follow along with some of the...
So last Friday's contest has been rescheduled for June 5th at 3:10 as part of a traditional doubleheader. Saturday's game will be played on September 28th at 1:10 as part of a split doubleheader.
Oh, God.
Sunday's game has been rescheduled single contest on August 20th at 6 p.m. that had been an off day for both teams. So this is what you said when you start doing this. This apparent record number of postponements is going to result in a cluttered and difficult season on down the road. They got to pay the piper for all this stuff. You got it?
15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Yeah, okay. So that does make for the White Sox... So that'll be a 15-day stretch with an off day and then a 20-day stretch with an off day going into their last two series of the year to end August and into September.
And also, apparently, the winner of the green jacket can have it off premises for a year.
And they can wear it? You can wear it around?
Yes, you can do have it. You can do whatever you want with it. It is yours to wear as you see fit for a calendar year. And then it has to go back to Augusta, to the clubhouse there, and you can wear it there on the grounds.
It's to be laundered there. It can only be laundered at Augusta.
Who knows? I guarantee you there's probably some kind of rule there.
Laundry traditions like no other.
And we're still waiting to find out about what's going on with tonight's Cubs game. My speculation is coming off of the stuff that Joe Maddon was saying, they can't play this thing. I don't know. It just seems impractical and wrong to me.
I don't know enough about the groundskeeping business, but the freezing
and
thawing.
You're not in the Hall of Fame.
I am not in the groundskeeping Hall of Fame. That's for sure. But the freezing and thawing has to become an issue at some point, doesn't it? Doesn't the repeated freezing and thawing have to at some point become a problem for the outfield?
I guess they could just resod it though, right? I mean, they do that so often that they just roll in new sod after an AC/DC concert or whatever it is.
I guess if you're trying to play the next day, though, if you're trying to, I don't know. I just kind of always had problems on the lawn at the house. Shohei Ohtani, too.
I gave up. I've gone prairie.
It's probably the best way to do it.
Just totally, especially in the back.
Head out into the wilderness.
Just went prairie. And remind me, did I tell you about the rabbit stare down?
No, Dan, you have not told me about the rabbit stare down.
Every day when I get home, the same rabbit's there.
How do you know it's the same rabbit?
Because I know, and it looks at me.
They all look different.
It's like Donnie Darko going on all of a sudden. It's just, and it's given me this
lurking.
It's giving me this. That's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen in my life.
Overrated.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a Donnie Darko guy.
Freaked me out.
I think it's because of when I saw it.
Oh, freaked me out.
What was going on?
And it's and it doesn't get scared. Like, I'll open the door, and like the little alarm beeps go off, and I'll slam the door, and it's still there. It has no fear of noise, of human beings. Usually rabbits are like, oh, person, I'm going to run away.
Does it have big, sharp, pointed teeth?
It might.
It could.
It might be the killer rabbit, but it looks at me like it was like the coyote. I understand coyotes having attitude. The coyotes on my porch looked at me like, all
right. Yeah, kind of swagger around.
Yeah, this is a rabbit. And it's giving me the look of like, oh, what are you doing here? I'm like, I live here.
We have a rabbit in the courtyard that runs around, but it's pretty docile. It runs away from you when you get about 6 feet away.
No, it's giving me like it knows too much. It knows something. It like knows what's in the computer browsing history or something. It's giving,
lurking around and watching
it's
you.
It's giving me a look, and it's in the same spot every day.
You guys been cooking Hasenpfeffer at the house a lot? No, you think he wants revenge?
I did have a lot in Italy.
Hasenpfeffer.
A lot of rabbit.
Really?
That's everywhere.
I didn't know that was a big thing.
That's a staple. Yeah.
Staple. Is that a greasy kind of thing?
No.
Is it
like no. It's phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah. Rabbit in Tuscany is just, it's just, people just eat it like anything else. But okay, I just got to figure that out.
So you mentioned the Shohei Ohtani thing, right? And yes. Jake Arrieta was talking about it too. And interesting to point out Jake's issue, he was more concerned about things happening all season long. We've seen success over the first couple of weeks for Ohtani. They've picked their spots a little bit. They, even though he shows really no platoon splits as a left-handed batter in Japan, he's hit lefties and righties pretty equally well. They've tried to keep him away from left-handers as best they can. He did face a lefty the other day, I think it was a pinch hit spot. But Ohtani, the way he's succeeding is interesting because that triple he hit, the one that cleared the bases the other day, it's an inside heater. One of the home runs he hit, I believe that third one was an inside heater.
Well, he does clear that hip quickly.
That's what they'd fix. That's what they think they'd fix. They did kind of adjust the leg kick and how he, you know, gets out toward the ball and what his stride looks like. But he's been able to cover inside fastballs. Remember when, I don't know if it just is what scouts say when you get a player who's played professionally in another place that comes over. Remember the scouting report on Jose Abreu when he came to the big leagues? Can he handle inside heat? Can he get around on the inside fastball? Ohtani, kind of the same thing. I don't remember what Ichiro's scouting report was when he came over in 2000, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I remember in spring training, people saw Ichiro and say, what is he trying to do with that little tennis backhand? This isn't going to work.
He didn't have a hit
in
his first spring training. So we're seeing him cover that pitch a little bit, which I think is a pretty interesting thing. Also this, his sprint speed around from first to third from home to third, was tops. Not only was it one of the top...
It's not Billy Hamilton.
No, okay. It's not first tier.
Okay.
But it's second tier type speed.
Wow.
And I say second tier, and you go, oh, okay, well, he's a fast baseball player, whatever. You know, slow pitchers generally are. You know how much they don't focus on that? Yeah, there are athletes on those mounds. But sprint speed for them is a completely different thing. So I'm looking through, and I just saw this from an MLB stats Twitter account. He was the of top speed runs, at least having 10 top speed sprints. That's not a distance necessarily. That is just when a guy gets to top speed and gets clocked in, right? He was the 62nd fastest major league player so far.
Wow.
62nd. That's, you know, tops is Byron Buxton and two is Billy Hamilton. So Ketel Marte is up there.
It's Malik Smith up
there. Yeah, you fall down there and you've got a guy like Tommy Pham who's hitting the cover off the ball. Dansby Swanson. Mike Trout's at 27 so far this year. Mookie Betts is at 40. Kevin Pillar, you know, outfielder for the Blue Jays up there at 46. You've got Carlos Correa who handles that mass around pretty good. Yoan Moncada at 55. We're talking about Andrelton Simmons, Zach Cozart, Hunter Renfroe, Shohei Ohtani, 62nd so far. Just the sheer athleticism that guy handles. And Jake's got a point when we listen to the audio before the update. The ability, because if anybody knows about keeping yourself in a specific shape for 162 games, 30-something starts, Jake knows how to do that.
That was his first thing. He said the strain on your body. The first reason he gave was, and maybe that is a 6-month issue, and that three weeks into a baseball season is just not enough time to see evidence of exactly what, and maybe Jake Arrieta is 100% right.
And when the Angels say you're starting every 6 day, we're going to keep you on the Japanese schedule because they throw typically every 6 days over there in the rotation as opposed to every 5 days here. They're going to skip him. They're going to keep him out days before and days after starts, although I think he did pinch hit over the weekend in a spot like that. I know he wants to play more, and I know everybody wants to see him more. But to be quite honest, I'm going to be selfish here. I want Mike Trout in the playoffs. I want Mike Trout in the playoffs, and I want him to have a deep playoff run. We, as baseball fans, deserve it, and he's damn well earned it. And if that's what it takes, keeping that offense a little bit healthier, keeping that rotation, which needs him, a little bit healthier, I will abdicate my Shohei Ohtani everyday throne and move on to greener pastures.
The texters are out. If the rabbit's in the same spot every day, walk over to that spot and see if there are little ones. Rabbits will make a low spot in the grass and use that to hide their new babies. Spring is the time of year this happens.
Oh,
I have to dodge them regularly.
Protecting the young.
I haven't seen any, and it's just sitting right out in the open. It's not in any little hidden area. Maybe it's near a nest. Said Dan,
do rabbits nest?
Hit it, yeah. Hit it with the holy hand grenade of Antioch. And multiple people have texted in.
Five will be the number. We'll be right out. Three should be the number of the counting. For the holy hand grenade of Antioch.
This is, why don't you take the opposite approach and go up to the rabbit and be nice to it? Because it's giving me the look. It's not an. It's. I don't think it's a nice rabbit.
Yeah, you know, you cave, and then that's going to be. They're just going to start walking all over you.
It's got a nest, moron. Okay. Sorry, right. I didn't see it. And the 630 says, would you explain what a split doubleheader is? Yeah, it's day-night doubleheader.
Yeah, it's your day-night.
As opposed to
4 hours in between. Or
right, as opposed to just a quick break and the
half hour in between the
drag
first
the
second.
Infield and get you going and bring out new lineup cards.
For reference, the pre- and post-game host will usually fill for about a half an hour in between those two games and then just send it to the play-by-play team with about 5 minutes left in the countdown.
Five minutes on anything. Here he is.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Here's your game. Just to finish up the Jake Arrieta point on two-way players, you'll remember, too, that in the top four selections of the Major League Baseball draft last year, we had two players who predominantly played two ways in high school and in college. It's Brendan McKay, who was drafted out of Louisville. He went to the Rays as a first baseman and a pitcher, and Hunter Green. So I was just kind of, I wanted to see if those guys, you know, because we're just starting minor league season so far, and it looks like Hunter Green's mostly just going to pitch. The Reds have said maybe he'll get some hitting in later on, and Mackenzie Gore has a blister or something like that, so he's on the disabled list for a little while. I had hoped to have a bit more sample size for you and whether or not baseball was going to try those experiments with top-tier prospects, and it turns out you have to wait longer.
No, the idea of fast pitchers, though, is very interesting because there are a lot of people who remember how the Cubs used Jason Marquis.
That's right.
Always very athletic and loved to use him as a pinch runner because especially when it was, you know, an off day for him, it was like having a free roster spot. A guy who was a good base runner and who was fast enough. There have been others.
You know, anybody text Brooks Kieschnick in? Not that he was, you know, necessarily fast, but he did both jobs.
No, I think Mark Burley also was used every once in a while. It's sometimes you get these guys that have retained a little bit of athleticism and give you some value. You there,
but more often than not, very slow.
Top of the hour, Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports on what the hell is going on at Michigan State and how possibly it can keep getting worse. At every single public turn, they find a way to make it worse, and they're making the solution there apparently to a larger and larger scale every time they open their mouths or interact with other human beings. He's coming up. He's always terrific. That's at the top of the hour on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This segment's brought to you by Dell. Small businesses get tailored tech solutions when they partner with Dell, plus free shipping and a price match guarantee on everything, including laptops with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL. All right, so even if you're allowed to wear your green jacket,
mm-hmm.
So he's got clearance from the tower.
Just because you can.
Exactly. Exactly.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Is he just concerned that he's going to be mistaken for Oliver Platt?
Yeah.
He's going to get that look at somebody like, how do I know you? Were you an executive decision? Were
you
the guy?
Did you do a couple episodes on The West Wing?
Were you the guy chewing on the show? Were you the food critic and chef?
Were you in a terrible remake of The Three Musketeers with Charlie Sheen, Kiefer Sutherland, and Chris O'Donnell?
God, I
have to be the only person in America who saw that movie.
I had not heard of it when you brought it up. I took your word for it. I thought it might have been one of these. I forgot the term, but you know that there's a huge mistaken belief that there was a movie called Shazam starring Sinbad.
Yes. And you never happened.
Right. It never happened.
Never happened.
Never came close to happening.
It's not, yeah.
Yet people insist that they saw it
right.
or saw things of it. And then I thought that when you brought up that version of the Three Musketeers, that there was a collective delusion abetted by Reddit, much like the Shazam delusion.
That I'd been Shazam.
I thought of it like the Kazam theory, same principle.
Well, no, Kazam, the Shaquille O'Neal, that's part of what confuses people.
Yes.
There was a movie called Kazam.
Which was bad.
It was bad. It starred Shaquille O'Neal. But there is an ongoing like flat earth dispute about the existence of the movie Shazam that starred Sinbad that did not exist.
Yes. No, this is an actual Three Musketeers movie with Oliver Platt in the role of Porthos. Chris O'Donnell is D'Artagnan. Kiefer Sutherland is
Athos,
and Aramis is Charlie Sheen. Tim Curry plays Cardinal Richelieu. Very good.
But dressed as Frank Enfurter, oddly enough.
Well, big high heels walking around underneath that cardinal's garb.
How do you do? I see you've met my faithful handyman.
I was a very confused young man watching the movie. Uh-huh. Very confused, but somehow delighted the entire hour and a half through it. Because, yeah, it was a quicken. Just a real quick romp through the year. Oof. No, but I understand people are texting in about Phil Mickelson wearing his screen jacket at Krispy Kreme and wearing it in other places too. But four spots, three of them games over the last, 2 weeks, week and a half?
It's enough.
Seems like a lot.
It's enough. Put it away.
Also, here's the other thing. If Patrick Reed showed up courtside at the Houston Rockets game or really any other game, you don't think the broadcast would catch the fact that, hey, Patrick Reed is here, let's put him on television, unless he wore the green jacket? They're going to notice. They're going to notice you're there. You're the Masters champion. You will get your television time. You don't have to wear your green jacket.
Okay. Let me an alternate interpretation here. By the way, Mandela effect, is what everybody's saying, is that the collective delusion is called the Mandela effect for whatever reason.
Oh.
Rule of three, rule of 17. If Patrick Reed... If he wears it everywhere.
And only.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, if he goes hard the other direction, it's one thing to do it a little too much, but if you are going to make it your bit that every time you leave the house, you are going to have it on, I'm down for that.
Then I want him.
I'm there for that.
I want him in pictures like Cavallari takes of Jay Cutler.
Yes.
You know, the bare ass photo and some sort of tiki vacation, and he's just wearing the green. Like Donald Sutherland. In Animal House, reaching up for the top plant, and his ass is underneath the cardigan sweater.
Let the record show one segment went from Kiefer to Donald Sutherland.
I'll get you there.
That we got a multi-generational Sutherland reference series there. But yeah, the more mundane, the better. If Patrick Reed is like walking a dog while wearing the green jacket, or somebody gets a shot of him like in the back of Us magazine where they've got, you know, Jennifer Garner at the Circle K,
right,
or you know, something like that. The celebrities, they're just like us. Here's Patrick Reed, of course, in his green jacket buying
it's progressively more stained. There's like a burn, like a cigarette stain in there somewhere. This from the text again saying the movie I saw was not the movie I saw. They said it's The Man in the Iron Mask. That's not true. That was another movie based on the Three Musketeers that are moved down the
line. Also Alexander Dumas, right?
It's yes, it's Leonardo DiCaprio is King Louis. King Louis, Jeremy Irons, John Malkovich, and Gerard Depardieu.
Oh my God, there's not enough scenery to be chewed.
There was.
Craft service is actually serving handfuls of scenery.
It was quite. I've watched that movie too. It is something.
Something bad?
No, it's actually kind of. There are scenes. Jeremy Irons is great.
That seems like everybody's acting so hard.
It was. The Malkovich scenes are tough. Depardieu is just like he's drunk the entire movie because that was his career. And Jeremy Irons is actually pretty decent. But it's a very young Leonardo DiCaprio, and he's kind of a bitch throughout the movie.
Okay.
I mean, I think he was supposed to be, but decent movie enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just those kind of overwrought period dramas are something that you gravitate to.
Oh, yeah, they're my thing. They're my jam.
And I do not.
They are my jam. Wait until Game of Thrones kicks back up for you. We're going to do episode recaps.
This segment brought to you by Dell. Small businesses get tailored tech solutions when they partner with Dell, plus free shipping and a price match guarantee on everything, including laptops with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL. If you got a hazmat suit, put it on, because you're going to want to wear it when we're talking about what continues to go on with the bungling of Michigan State University from the very, very top, from their sports doctors, from multiple sports and multiple people there. Dan Wetzel has been covering it closely. He also covered Penn State closely, and now we're at the point where it's not unreasonable to compare and contrast the width and breadth and depth of, I think, width and breadth are the same thing. And
you can have all three, Dan.
Thank you. At this point in my career, I'm entitled.
You can have all three.
All right, so we'll talk about that and more with him next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.